if you're just sitting back, you know, and hoping that the government is going to come in and save you, you know, that's going to put you in a very bad position. So, Lee, I'm really excited to have you on my episode today. We've got a lot of topics that we want to talk about, but one of the things that I think is really important that a lot of people want to know about is a lot of the legal issues around what's going on and just everything that's going on in society right now with COVID-19. So Lee Davis, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. I think it's a very timely topic. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that maybe people could hear and maybe help make them feel a little bit better about their situation.
Yeah. So Lee, we've been friends for a long time, but for the people that don't know you out there, let me get your background. Like, how did you get, where are you from? How'd you get started? How'd you get started in law, that type of stuff?
Sure. Well, I have somewhat humble beginnings, I guess. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, my family was not wealthy. We weren't super poor either, but we just put our heads down and got through it all through life. My parents gave me a great upbringing. They gave me great opportunities. I managed to not throw all of those opportunities away. And one of the opportunities I got was once I discovered that I wanted to go to law school, I was able to go to law school. So since 1997, I've been a practicing civil litigator in the state of Georgia. And I handle all types of different cases. Primarily, I do what's called commercial litigation. That is usually litigation or lawsuits between two businesses about some aspect of their business. Sometimes it's representing banks. Sometimes it's representing small or medium-sized businesses and whatever matters they have that come up. So my practice actually touches on a wide range of topics and especially things that could be relevant during this COVID-19 crisis and quarantine.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know your story a little bit of how you got into law. It's pretty interesting story. You were telling me when that you discovered you have a good argument. I mean, if you mind sharing.
Well, the simple answer is that I got too many speeding tickets when I was a teenager. And they say that a lawyer who represents themselves has a fool for a client. And so my very first experience with the law was me both being an amateur lawyer and having a fool for a client. I had to defend myself in traffic court because I had accumulated too many points on my driver's license and I was about to have it suspended if I was found guilty for reckless driving. And the charge involved basically me doing a donut at 2 a.m. in a gravel parking lot in front of a police officer.
That's great.
But, you know, I didn't know anything about being a lawyer. I had never really thought about law school at all. I didn't know any lawyers. There were no lawyers in my family, really, none that I knew anyways. And, you know, great-grandfather had been a lawyer, I found out later, but I didn't even know anybody. So I didn't know what it entailed and I didn't know how to defend myself either, but every now and then life kind of puts you together with what you're good at. Whether you really choose to do it or not. And this was my time. This was, I went into court and without knowing what I was doing, I put together a pretty good legal argument. And on top of that, I didn't know I was going to have the opportunity to, but I put together might be my most effective cross-examination ever. And when I got out of that, I was so exhilarated by what happened that I decided right then and there that I wanted to go to law school, and that's how I got to do the law. However, before anybody gets any ideas, I was not successful in getting myself acquitted. I was not found guilty of reckless driving, but because I, again, didn't really understand what I was doing, I managed to walk right into a lesser included charge. But in the end, instead of getting my license suspended, I was able to, because I got it reduced, I was able to be on probation for a year and I got to keep my driver's license.
Hey, so, well, at least that's something, you know? I mean,
that's it. And, you know, it wasn't the result. It was, you know, even to this day, rarely is it the result that drives my satisfaction with anything. It was just simply that I just found it exhilarating. And yeah. So, you know, we don't always get to choose the things that we're good at. But this is what I'm good at, apparently. And so I went to law school. I graduated in 1997. And since then, I've made it work.
So. That's awesome. That's a great story. I love hearing people's stories on how they got into the profession, because I always talk about the journey, right? And everybody, you know, you try to plan your journey, but there's like different twists and turns. And sometimes like you think you're going one way and an event happens in your life and it totally changes like your career and where you go. And then you find you're passionate about something you never even thought about you'd be passionate on. It's pretty interesting. You got a really good story.
That's it. And, you know, now my next goal in practice of law is I want to make it and argue in front of the Supreme Court one day. You know, I've done almost everything else at this point, and you know, I really want to make an argument in front of the United States Supreme Court. And I've seen now with this COVID-19 thing and everything, now they're doing oral arguments by a video conference like this. And you know, right. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to. I mean, I would feel cheated if it was my first time trying to do that, and I had to do it by video conference. I mean, but. Whatever, I'll take it however I can get it. But I'm admitted to the Supreme Court. I just don't have any cases that you know really would ever require me to go argue there. But I'm looking for them all the time. I'm looking for them.
You know, it just fascinates me, especially like now. Like, I mean, nobody's in the room with, you know, the person that, you know, they're trying or whatever, right? So how is it that they know nobody's else in the room trying to feed them answers or anything like that? Like, how is that working? Like right now, like how is it in the court scene because it's through video?
Well, in the state of Georgia, I suspect that this is the way that it is in a lot of places. Our court system is pretty much shut down right now, at least for the stuff that I do. For emergencies like domestic violence orders and, you know, restraining orders and things like that, the courts are basically doing it via Zoom or some other type of video conferencing. And but for everything else, all civil cases, for the most part, except things that are just extreme emergencies, everything is put on hold. Everything is stayed. The court system is open, but none of our deadlines are running. No statutes of limitations are running right now. Everything is just on hold until the Georgia Supreme Court issues another order ending the judicial emergency. And on that day, whenever that day happens to be, whether it's May 1st or, you know, July 1st or whenever, it's going to be treated as though it is March the 14th of 2020. So we go right back to there, and everything that happened in between is just going to be treated like it didn't really happen. So in terms of deadlines and all that kind of stuff, and we can still file things, they're just not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's just very unique times. I mean, obviously we've never had to face anything like this, but I think one of the biggest topics that people would be interested in learning a little bit about is what happens like when they default on mortgages and, you know, loans, leases, that type of stuff, like during a time like this. Is there certain types of legal advice or things that they should know about, you know, how they can kind of be protected or how they should go about certain things?
Sure. One of the busiest times of my career was between 2008 and about 2012, when there were a lot of, you know, foreclosures, a lot of loan defaults, lots of different types of people going into default for financial reasons. And I can tell you right now that this, what we're in right now, while it may cause some economic hardship, and it almost certainly will and is, the one thing that is different is that I think everybody recognizes that this is not 2008, and this is not the product of you know, however you want to couch it, somebody being irresponsible, somebody lending money they shouldn't have lent, somebody borrowing money they shouldn't have borrowed. This is not that at all. This is, I think this is more akin to a natural disaster that is affecting the entire world. And because of that, that's why the court systems are shut down. Right now, if you are renting an apartment or renting a house and you can't pay rent, your landlords cannot evict you right now, which causes me some consternation because, you know, I have a tenant and a tenant may or may not, you know, pay rent. But at the same time, as a human being, I don't want to be throwing anybody out of their house right now anyway,
right.
Even if it is one that I have to pay for. But, you know, it's, I think our legal system is going to recognize that this is more on order of a natural disaster. And because of that, I think that there are definitely going to be safeguards put in place. I think things are going to be handled differently than they were in 2008. It's not going to be you know, straight up going in and filing and getting a judgment. It's for one thing, the number of cases that are going to come out of this are going to completely cripple our judicial system as it currently exists. We are already, certainly in the Metro Atlanta area, every one of the courts in Metro Atlanta is running at near full capacity. And, you know, you're going to add hundreds of thousands of cases on top of that, if they are allowed to proceed in the normal course of business, and nothing is ever going to go anywhere. It's just going to be a logjam and nothing is ever going to be able to proceed. Or if it does, it's going to be at such a slow pace that nothing's going to be done effectively. So I think, you know, just from a kind of a peace of mind standpoint, I would say that if you are experiencing financial difficulty and you're having trouble paying rent, you're having trouble paying your mortgage, I'm not saying to just throw up your hands and don't do anything. I think you need to probably start right now communicating with your landlord, communicating with your bank, tell them, you know, get out there ahead of it quickly. The people that I end up usually suing on behalf of banks, and I don't sue regular people, okay, let's make this very clear. I don't collect credit card debts. I don't collect personal lines of credit. That's not what I do. What I do is I collect business loans, okay? But I can tell you the thing that will make a banker call me before anything else is when people stop communicating with them. Even if it is just a weekly call to say, look, man, I know I'm behind, I'm working on it, I'm trying, can you work with me? What are my other options? What are our other options? What can we do to help, you know, mitigate this? And, you know, a smart bank, I think, would recognize that if you've got somebody who is paying their mortgage or paying their commercial loan or anything like clockwork beforehand, they're still a good customer. It's just that this thing has just completely blown up everything in life as we know it. And that doesn't mean he's a deadbeat. It just means maybe he hasn't worked in 90 days or 120 days and just doesn't have any money. So
right.
I think, you know, there's going to be creative ways to work around this. And I think a smart banker will do that. I think they'll recognize the people that that were good credit risks beforehand are still good credit risks as long as they are, you know, have the ability to pay. And if you're one of those people, or even if you're not, I would highly recommend just communicate with your landlord, communicate with your bank or your mortgage company, whoever happens to hold it, you know, just create a paper trail. I'm trying to do this. This is the situation, you know, just that sort of thing. I'm not going to say, listen, you know, I'm not telling anybody to just call up and admit that they've defaulted on their loan. I'm just saying, ask what are the options and be vocal and be active and don't just bury your head in the sand and think that the problem's going to go away if you ignore it. It's not.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. I think people, you know, your financial situation, you know, where you're at right now, waiting to act, waiting to contact all your creditors, waiting to contact your vendors and all these other people is a false move, right? You want to make sure that you want to stay ahead of the curve, because there are people, you know, that are willing to do things, right? I mean, people that will work with you because no one predicted this. No one planned this. This isn't something that, you know, anyone was expecting to happen, right? And like you said, I think the biggest thing is understanding that this isn't a worldwide event that has affected everything. Right. So if you've been paying on time all the time, you know, and you've been working with somebody for years even, call them up and make sure, you know, and see if there's anything that you guys can work out, because at the end of the day, it's a waiting game. This will pass, right?
Sure.
Business and things may look different, but it will pass. And I think if you maintain those relationships with your vendors and your banks and your clients and all these other people, it's going to come back to you.
Yes.
It'll come back to you.
I agree. Absolutely. And on top of that, I highly suspect that there's going to be some legislation that gets passed so that, you know, we have some protection for folks that find themselves in a bad situation really through, you know, no real fault of their own. You know, I feel like they're going to do this because they've already been proactive. And I mean like Congress and that sort of thing. Already been proactive with stimulus checks, although I question what $1,200 is really going to do, you know, out there. But, you know, they're already thinking about that. And I think that it's going to come. It's just we're not at that stage of the crisis at this point. It's more what do we need to do right now stage of the crisis. And once they start to get to handle on that, I think you'll start hearing that there are going to be plans to protect consumers and plans to protect people from, you know, just losing everything over something that they really had nothing to do with. So,
yeah,
that's my feeling anyway. I don't know this for sure, but that really is my sense of it. And again, just from a practical standpoint, if they don't do something like that, our judicial system's going to be crippled anyway.
Yeah. Now, I know, you know, the federal government, you know, SBA, and I know that they've got a lot of different packages, you know, trying to help businesses. And so there is some stuff, you know, that is taking place. I think the biggest thing as leaders, as business owners, is to continue to do what we can. That's in our power, right? And continue, you know, some people, you know, may take, you know, oh, this is a vacation. Like, that's the last thing you want to do is right. Sit back. Like, you got to dive in. Like, I, you know, we do a lot of social media for our clients, and the biggest thing you want to do is stay active, keep, you know, keep on social media, keep connected with your current clients, keep connected with your current vendors, make sure that they hear you, they see you, you can get on video, make sure you put out video content. Like, that is the thing that you really need to be doing, because, you know, if you're just sitting back, you know, and hoping that the government is going to come in and save you, you know, that's going to put you in a very bad position. You know, it's like, do what you need to do as a business owner and continue to keep in contact with everybody, your vendors, your clients, you know, everybody. You have employees, same thing, you know, being very open and being, you know, in communication where you are financially, where, you know, those types of things.
Sure.
Because everybody needs to be in this thing together. And I think communication is key, especially now because everybody's home.
Right. And, you know, as you said, we're kind of all in this together. We may not all be in the same boat, but we're in the same storm. And a rising tide raises all ships.
Correct.
And because all of our ships are in the same storm, a falling tide is going to sink all of the ships. And really, the way that I look at it is, you can't have rich without poor, and, you know, everybody is going to be affected by this. So it's not like we're going to be able to just turn our backs on the whole segment of society and say, you should have been paying your bills. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to be able to happen. Everybody is going to take a hit this time. This is not 2008. Every segment of society is going to take a hit on this. And so I think there is going to be a much different approach. I don't know how long it's going to take for them to get a handle on this thing, but you know, whether it's in the coming weeks or the coming months, but I think by the end of 2020, for sure, we are going to be looking at a very different economy, not just in the amount of money that's changing hands and the things that people are doing, but simply in the way that we really do business in general. Like, it's going to be a fundamental change. I really think that the normal that we knew on March the 11th is gone. And we are all going to have to adapt, you know, from the top on down. Everybody's going to have to adapt and understand things are not the same way that they were at the beginning of 2020. And that's just reality. That's just how it's going to be.
So in closing, if there was one piece of advice that you would give somebody, especially in times like this, you know, kind of helping them get through this and understanding what their legal options are, what would that be?
Well, first of all, understand that you almost always have plenty of legal options, okay? Most importantly, don't panic. As I said, you know, as a rising tide raises all ships, so does a sinking tide. You are no means alone. And there, it's kind of a cliche, but there is safety of some sort in numbers. And because there is a huge number of people that are riding out the storm together, just don't panic. You know, the whole point is to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Your first concern should be getting through this. Just, we got to get through this. We'll get to the end of this trail, wherever it's leading us. And then we're all going to have to reassess, where are we and what are we doing next? And until you get to that point, until we're out of just survival mode, just don't beat yourself up, I don't think. I mean, as I said, there's lots of sinking ships all around, and you're by no means alone. And you always have options, always. So it's not the end of the world. It might be the end of the world as we know it, quote REM, but it's not the end of the world. We're going to get a handle on it, and things are going to slowly come back to something that we all adapt to as normal. I just don't think it's going to be the same as it was beginning of March.
I love that. So in a crisis, in an economic downturn, don't panic, stay calm, put one foot in front of the other, because eventually this too shall pass and we will get through this. Lee, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming out on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the episode. If you guys enjoyed it, show some love, give me a thumbs up, and subscribe. Also, make sure you check out our exclusive C-Level group on Facebook.